The following takes place between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m.
I'm your Huckleberry.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the second hour of today's version of Butler on Business. And as we enter this hour, the Dow is up 14 points to 11,000. The S&P is up 4.5. Jason, it looks like 1150 and change is all we're going to get out of the S&P, at least based on the activity I'm seeing. We had a succession in the first hour and a half of trading of four higher highs and four lower lows, but it looks like 1150 is about as far as she wants to go up today. We'll still call it 1200 to down around, well, we got all the way down to 1100 back on the 9th, so let's just call it 1200 to 1100. That's a wide range, but I think that's a safe range. And the gold, silver, they're still on a tear. I noticed
they
the silver, they're off their highs, but they're still well up on the day.
Both gold and silver off their highs. Gold's still up $18 on the day to $18.43. Silver's up $1 to $41.68. Oil's actually reversed course. The NYMEX is now up 0.4% to $82.76.
And your U.S. dollar today, I mean, you're only out 0.5% if you're holding U.S. dollars, and unfortunately most people are. Now, the jobless claims in the U.S. Yesterday topped forecast. We were back up over 400,000 again. We had one week there where we were below 400. I think it came in at 408. As you probably have heard by now, U.S. existing home sales fell 3.5% in the month of July. They were hoping to see a 3.8% increase. So while they were preparing for that alien attack, they missed their estimates on what was going on in the housing market, and they had a totally whiffed on that. The Fed's Philadelphia Federal Reserve's gauge of manufacturing activity came in at a minus 30.7, which is far short. And I'd say it's far short of the 3.7% increase that they were hoping for. Now, readings above zero point to expansion, and readings below zero indicate contraction. So we got another stat pointing to contraction. And speaking of contractions, Jason, the number of millionaires are contracting. Tell them about it.
Yeah, this was an interesting story. It was reported out of the Wall Street Journal. It was titled, Millionaires Go Missing. Well, back in 2007, Alan, there were 390,000 tax filers that reported adjusted gross income of over $1 million, and they paid about $309 billion in taxes. Well, 2 years later, in 2009, there were only 237 filers reporting an income over $1 million. That was a decline of 39% in just 2 years. And almost four out of every 10 millionaires, so almost 40%, 40% of people earning $10 million or more vanish in 2 years. So we saw a substantial decline in the highest tax brackets. And these disappearing millionaires, I think they go a long way toward explaining why the federal tax revenues really sunk to the, what is it now, 15% of GDP that we've seen in recent years. The loss of millionaires, it accounts for at least $130 billion of higher federal budget deficit right now because of these lower tax revenues. But it kind of goes back to what Warren Buffett was saying about having the wealthy of the wealthy pay their fair share. If Warren Buffett, if he really wants to reduce the deficit, he shouldn't encourage policies that tax more. He should encourage policies to create more millionaires. And I think that it's also probably worthwhile pointing out, Alan, that the millionaires who left that are now off this roll, they still pay a mountain of tax. Now, those who make at least $1 million, they accounted for about 0.2% of all tax returns. So 0.2% of all tax returns. But they
are millionaires and billionaires.
Are millionaires and billionaires, and they paid 20.4% of all income taxes in 2009.
Well, the other thing I'd like to point out, Jason, keep in mind, if the government were using GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles, we don't have a $1.3 trillion deficit. We have a $5 trillion deficit. And if you confiscated 100% of everybody's wages, we still run a deficit. So millionaires and billionaires are hardly the ticket out of this mess. The only way out of it is to reduce the spending.
Well, yeah, that's right. And even to just go on that a little bit more, the top 3%, they paid more the top 3% paid more in taxes than the bottom 97% combined. So it's tough to sell that they are not paying their fair share.
Well, all right. But again, I think the underlying point is the real size of the deficit using the accounting methods that every business in America is compelled to use. It's a $5 trillion deficit, not a trillion three right. or five. And with that large a number, if we had 100% income tax rate on everybody, we still don't close this gap. So sitting up there talking about millionaires and billionaires and corporate jets, that is a drop in the bucket compared to the spending. Now, all right, we started going over Mike Larson with the Weiss Rating Research's Steps to Financial Doomsday. This is part two of his series, Government Debt Exploding. $14.6 trillion. Now, that is the public debt, not counting those unfunded liabilities. Now, worse, that debt load keeps going up. It's ballooning. The official number by 2021 on this big deal we got a couple weeks ago will rise to 20.8%, best case. That's the best case scenario. Now, Uncle Sam is now routinely selling tens of billions of dollars in longer-term treasuries every few weeks. Just in 1 week in August, we dumped $32 billion in three-year notes, $24 billion in 10-year notes, and $16 billion in 30-year bonds on the market. So we've got out-of-control government debt.
Yeah, our debt is it's roughly doubling, Alan, every 10 years, and that's thanks to our legislators in Washington from both sides of the political spectrum, from our Democrat friends up there in Washington, our Republican friends up in Washington, from the Obama administration, from the Bush administration. But that's a trend that's been it's going back some time, that about every 7 to 10 years our national debt doubles. Well, I mean, that's a government problem. That's a spending problem.
And while the talking heads were just cheering on that debt ceiling debate, you know, basically what they agreed to was to let the government go on hock by another $2.8 trillion right away. But keep in mind, they're going to have to raise it again. Just by virtue of that deal that they passed, rather than raising it $2.8 trillion like they did, well, hell, they're going to have to raise it $6 or $7 trillion if we get that rosy economic growth that they're predicting. So that was nothing but a sham. If they're going to increase spending 50% over 10 years, they would have to do this record raising of the debt ceiling four more times before their 10 years is up. Now, that's nuts, isn't it, Jason?
You can see just how what an artificial barrier that is, that has never stopped government spending. It's been raised over 100 times now. It's going to continue to be raised until we address the root cause, which is out-of-control government spending.
Now, the question you have to ask yourself is, what is the end game here? Why is this so dangerous? How is this second step down the road to perdition so perilous? And again, look at Europe. Greece was allowed to run up its national credit card for years. I mean, it owed 195.4 billion euros in 2005. That ballooned all the way up to 328.6 billion euros just last year. Now, Ireland's outstanding debt, it surged from 44.4 billion euros to 148 billion euros, and Portugal's went up from 96.5 to 160. So as a result, their debt to GDP ratios exploded to 143% for Greece, 96% for Portugal, and 92% for Ireland in 2010.
And for a while, you know, you can get away with it for a while, Alan, but pretty soon your creditors start wanting to turn off the spigot here. They're not going to keep funding you forever. And when they really started doing that, when they started, to use the expression you said a second ago, credit cards, when they start cutting up those nations' credit cards and not letting them borrow anymore, now what you see is the carnage that we're seeing over in Europe.
Now, with Europe's economy slowing, the tax revenues needed to service all that debt are disappearing, and that's what's happening here. The economies and Greece and Portugal have been in recession now for some time. Growth in Spain and Italy is now virtually non-existent, and the carnage Jason speaks about is spreading far beyond those ravaged nations. Britain's economy grew at only 0.2% in April, May, and June. Now, that's a combined number. Disposable income fell 2.7% in 12 months, just leading up to March of 2011. Retailers over there in Europe are going bankrupt, I mean right and left, and to make matters worse, Britain's austerity program is expected to eliminate 300,000 government jobs. I don't know if that's worse or not, but yeah. Anyway.
But even, I mean, in Germany right now, the most recent GDP, the quarterly numbers that came out in Germany were pretty weak, and in Europe's banking sector, if you look across the board right now, Europe's banking sector is being pushed to the absolute brink. This month, the European central banks, they had to expand the cheap loans to the banks to make sure none of them run short of cash. And, I mean, it really all comes down to the fact, Alan, that the clock's ticking here. And here in the United States, our debt-to-GDP ratio just hit 100% this year. So if you think that we're any different than what's going on in Europe, you're sadly mistaken. What's going on in Europe is just the precursor to the main event, the precursor to what's going to unfold right here in the United States, because we have the same problems that they do. We have incredible government spending. We have absolutely insane levels of government spending, and we have a population that over the last several decades has become so dependent on these government programs. There is no way our government can continue to fund these programs. And unfortunately, when reality hits, when they have to realize that they can't continue funding these programs forever, you're going to have a very large part of the population that's going to be badly hurt by that because of the fact that they become so dependent on these government handouts.
And keep in mind, since they are spending and spending and spending, and you cannot raise taxes enough to cover the spending, we cannot close the deficit, which means we cannot pay back the debt. You have to go to the end game. What happens on the end game? The same thing that has happened throughout history. The currency eventually fails. This is Alan Butler, Butler on Business. We'll be back with Dr. Alina Johnson on the other side of this break.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? The lights are much brighter.
Weekdays at 2. Keep it locked to Biz 1190 for American Advisor. Join Scott Carter as he offers his unique insights on finance, the economy, and the precious metals market. American Advisor, only on Biz 1190, part of the Wall Street Radio Network. Always right on the money.
Hello from Dr. Roof.
And hello from Dale Cardwell of Trustdale, working for you to cut through the hype and misinformation and lead you to the best contractors, products, and services available. Trustdale has identified Dr. Roof as your safest choice and best value in roofing, as well as all your exterior needs.
Your trust is a major accomplishment for us, Dale. 23 years ago, we adopted a simple formula. Provide people with what they want. A great job with great care and attention to detail. And here's the proof. Dr. Roof can give our customers peace of mind with a third-party independent roof inspection by GAF, who, along with Dr. Roof, stands behind a 25-year no-leak workmanship warranty and lifetime on material.
That's amazing.
Especially since there are no enforced standards or codes or licensing for roofers in Georgia.
Well, that's why I recommend you, Dr. Roof.
So for all your roofing and exterior needs, call Dr. Roof at 770-552-ROOF or on the web at drroof.com. That's drroof.com, spelled drroof.com.
Chris Monroe here, and like most guys, I'm a problem solver. I like to get to the root of problems and get things fixed. And there is nothing more frustrating to me than dealing with a health problem that you just can't seem to get to the bottom of. You go to multiple doctors, they tell you everything is fine, but you know better. You don't feel your best. I want you to put an end to that runaround today if you're in the same situation. Call the incredible team at Progressive Medical Centers of America. They are the most comprehensive integrative medical center in the Southeast. Using both conventional and natural medicine, along with in-depth testing, they're going to get to the root of why you don't feel your best and then help you achieve balance and your highest level of health. They have done wonders for my health, fitness, and well-being, and they're going to do the same for you. 770-676-6000. Schedule an initial consultation and begin your journey to being well. 770-676-6000 and on the web at progressivemedicalcenter.com.
Financial news, market analysis, and viewpoints from the experts. That's what you get when you listen to Market Wrap with Mo Ansari.
Hi, I'm Mo Ansari, and if you've got questions about personal investments, call me on the air. I'll share my views and educate you about sectors, trends, and anything else you'd like to talk about.
So whether you're an institutional investor or just getting your feet wet, don't miss Market Wrap with Mo Ansari. Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Biz 1190, always right on the money.
Are you ready to learn and be entertained at the same time? Want to get a financial sense of direction in this crazy economic and political time period? Then tune in to It's All About Money with me, Bill Tatro, weekdays at 5, right here on Biz 1190, always right on the money.
Is there a risk that the United States could lose its AAA credit rating, yes or no?
No risk of that.
No risk.
No risk.
Welcome back to Butler on Business. My name is Jason Riddle here in the studio with Alan Butler, and joined now on the phone with us is Dr. Elena Johnson. Dr. Johnson taught economics as a college professor for 30 years and recently published a book about her 20-year experience in communist Romania entitled Echoes of Communism. Dr. Johnson, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jason.
Доброе утро. Как вы поживаете сегодня?
Доброе утро. Good morning.
Теперь по-английски. So how you doing?
Я не хочу говорить по-русски.
Немного. Я забыл много. Когда я маленький, я очень хорошо, но теперь я не разговариваю, so я забыл.
I'm left out of this conversation.
She told me I said good morning. She told me good morning back. How are you? She's fine. I'm fine. She said I spoke Russian. Well, I told her I've forgotten most of it because I don't ever get to speak it. Okay.
Well, Dr. Johnson, in a recent article, you discussed UN Agenda 21. That was when 178 nations signed down at the conference in Rio de Janeiro back in 1992. This global plan was called Sustainable Development, but what was really contained in UN Agenda 21, and what were the ultimate goals here?
Well, the ultimate goals were redistribution of population in accordance with resources, government control use of land in order to achieve equitable distribution of resources with emphasis on equitable and social equity. Land use must be controlled through zoning and planning, even if it entails changing the current zoning laws in various areas. Government has to control excessive profits from land use. Urban and rural land reform has to be done through public ownership of land, while the current owners have to continue paying taxes. And then public authorities have to hold developing rights of land and should be separated from the owner's rights. And, of course, the owner's rights would entail just paying taxes, basically.
You know, I don't think most people in this country are aware of the fact that this UN Agenda 21 marches on in America, as the title of your article it indicates.
I don't think they have any idea. It has dispersed so much. It's like a monster with many tentacles. I look on the web every day, and just about every government agency now has an Agenda 21 sustainable development, quote-unquote, program developed, and people have no clue what it is.
Well, why don't you tell them what it is? I mean, I know you say these ideas of tenets of Marxism, and since you came from over there, I think you're a better authority on the subject than most people would be.
Well, absolutely. Just to give you one example of one such organization, in June 2008, the One Planet Communities, which is one of the myriad of organizations that are currently working at the local and state government levels, said that populations should use 58% less electricity, 65% vehicle mileage downtime, 23 gallons of water less per person, which on the surface that sounds, you know, like a good idea to conserve. We all like to conserve. It also says that there should be 50% reduction in car ownership, 40 electric car solar power charging station, all of this while we're cutting quote-unquote carbon coal emissions, and the president said he's trying to bankrupt the coal industry, and most of our electricity is generated with coal. a reduction of footprint from 6 homes to 2 homes by 2020, stacked homes to avoid expansion of housing developments, 5-minute lifestyles, that is a 5-minute walk or bike from your home to a shop, to work, to go to school. You have to walk or bike within the community. You have to share cars for short distances from one stacked community to another or take a bus. And if you want to go further, you have to either take the train or the high-speed rail that they have been talking for years that still doesn't exist. And eventually their goal is for car ownership to disappear. Okay. And if you don't think that exists, we do already have universities, colleges, and K through 12 teaching this stuff and sustainability. For example, colleges teach how to build a sustainable workforce. Does anybody know what sustainable workforce is? They are teaching to build train sustainability manager for carbon accounting, corporate sustainability manager, energy auditor, engineering sustainability certified homes, just to name a few. And children are well indoctrinated in this sustainable development practices that are well outlined in Agenda 21. They actually want to degrow the United States back to the pre-car era. I just wrote an article a couple of days ago based on an article that caught my eye in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where they're actually having a conference on smart growth. Basically, the article is telling people that the American dream of living in the suburbs is not working for America, and we should all be moved downtown in tenements and take people off the roads from their car and put them in, invest the money in public transportation, buses, and not fix the roads so people cannot actually use their cars. Government has all sorts of schemes to control future use of agricultural land and water through the recently passed White House Rural Council. And if you remember last year, in California, saying Joaquin Valley, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly since I'm not from California, was basically turned into a dust bowl last year when water was denied to farmers in order to protect the Delta smelt. And 40,000 people became unemployed instantly. We had less vegetables and fruits. We had higher prices. There has been regulatory taking of land, especially in Florida, Miami-Dade County. They have the largest program called Florida Forever. They have purchased something like 9.8 million acres already under the Sustainable Development United Nations Agenda 21. They want us to ration water, electricity, fuel. They want us to do expensive retrofitting of our homes. And if you can't afford to do this, you're going to have to leave your home. People are being denied building permits, and land is deemed worthless. They basically want this Agenda 21 to prevent, to abolish private property because it is considered evil, and to prevent urban sprawl. And the key word here is public-private partnership. They want high-density living, and, of course, there's going to be a land shortage because the land they are buying is going to be returned to wilderness areas.
Elena, there's a couple things. Now, somebody new to this subject might think what you're saying is an exaggeration. Pardon me. But, you know, Obama, on your point about bankrupting the coal industry, Senator Obama, and we've got a YouTube clip, we'll pull it out one day and play it for you, he states he wants to bankrupt the coal industry. He wants to bankrupt any power company that uses coal. So, I mean, this is not as wacky as it seems. And also tell them about Bill Clinton, that 1993 treaty, the biodiversity treaty.
Right, and so he's not the only culprit. President Clinton actually in 1993 signed the biodiversity treaty, and this treaty basically was used to implement the UN Agenda 21 in the U.S. And if I may quote him, creation of national strategies, plans, policies, and processes which are crucial in achieving a sustainable world. And, of course, nobody paid attention to this until Dr. Michael Kaufman revealed a map to the U.S. Senate of the proposed developments of the wildlands under the UN Agenda 21 in the U.S. And I appended the map to my article. This map had red, yellow, and green zones, which were noted as core reserves and corridors with little or no human use. That was the red area. Buffer zones with highly regulated use, that was the green zones, yellow zones, and finally the green zones that were noted smart growth and human settlements. And if you look at the map, you're absolutely astonished because the green zones are very small given our huge landmass. Anyway, President Clinton signed Executive Order 12852, which created the President's Council on Sustainable Development to translate the UN Agenda 21 into public policy administered by the federal government. And the Council created the first UN Agenda 21 in the U.S. called Sustainable America. And in this document, there are 16 statements titled, We Believe. The ultimate, and of course you can Google it online, the ultimate goals were to abolish private property, control education, control and reduce population, and control the economy. So it is not my putting a tinfoil hat on my head and some kind of aberrant theory that I'm trying to portray.
Dr. Johnson, we only have a minute or so left, but you make a very crucial point in this article that I want you to explain to our listeners. You contrast the conception of human rights that we find in the United States Declaration of Independence with the conception of rights that we find in the United Nations Charter and Declaration of Human Rights. Can you maybe explain the difference there?
Absolutely. In our Constitution, private property has to be secure or liberty cannot exist. John Adams, the Decalogue said, thou shalt not steal. George Washington stated, private property and freedom are inseparable. Or by contrast, a United Nations believes that individual rights might take a backseat to the collective and that owning property is evil and it was somehow are confiscated from the poor or built on the back of the poor. So their aim is to take over this private property, which is counter to what we believe in the United States, what our Constitution states.
Well, it's counter to what we believe, but it's also counter to any type of human flourishing. We see what happens when societies are left free to engage in private enterprise and private property, and then when we see what happens when the individual is subjugated to the collective, we get a lot of unfortunate destruction.
Alina, we got to go. I appreciate you calling in. It's always a pleasure. We look forward to the next time.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Jason.
До свидания.
До свидания.
Biz 1190. Travel and transit.
Well, if you're heading out to Hartsfield-Jackson, we're seeing no departure delays there, but we do still have about an hour and 15-minute departure delay coming out of San Francisco. So if you have somebody flying in from there, you might want to check with their individual airline to see how that might affect their flight. Parking lots at the airport are all open. Security wait times at all your checkpoints look good with less than a 10-minute wait. And checking in at MARTA, all buses and trains are on time. I'm Joy Presley with your travel and transit report on Biz 1190.
Celebrate Freedom is back.
Celebrate Freedom.
Celebrate Freedom with Windshape Foundation returns to Jim R. Miller Park in Marietta on Saturday, September 3rd. It's Atlanta's largest one-day free outdoor concert featuring Eagle Sports.
Michael Jordan, the choir, Josh Wilson.
Would you dare, would you dance to believe?
Sidewalk Prophets, City Park, The Museum, Echoing Angels. Jason Castro from American Idol, Mr. Talkbox, Sean McDonald, and Switchfoot.
I dare you to run. I dare you to run.
Stay up to date with the latest info at CelebrateFreedomAtlanta.com.
The Overhead Door Company of Atlanta has been serving the Metro Atlanta area since 1935. You can trust them. They perform criminal background checks and drug screenings on all their employees. They're available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year for your convenience. Over 100 professional and highly trained service and installation technicians, and they will be there when you need them. And the Overhead Door Company of Atlanta does not send subcontractors to your door, but actual employees. They service and repair all brands of garage doors and openers. Their residential service is available Monday through Saturday until 8 p.m. You can call them anytime for same-day service. The Overhead Door Company of Atlanta. Check out their website, overheaddooratlanta.com, or you can call them at 404-872-3667. You can also click the Sponsors tab on bobandrodman.com. That's 404-872-3667 or overheaddooratlanta.com.
Are you a chronic sinus sufferer? If so, you may be a candidate for balloon sinuplasty. Dr. David Dillard is certified in sinuplasty, and he's the first Acclarent-certified surgeon in Georgia to perform this breakthrough office procedure. Listen to Mike Bages, a satisfied patient who can now breathe normally because of the balloon sinuplasty procedure performed at the office of Dr. David Dillard.
I've had trouble all my life with sinuses. I've had two of the old-type operations where they use the hammer and they actually break the bone with a chisel, and then there's a lot of recovery. You get black eyes, a lot of soreness, and takes days to get over.
Suffer no more with the balloon sinuplasty performed in-house by Dr. David Dillard. So there's no visit to the hospital, and the recovery time is very minimal.
I could breathe when I left. It just got better in like 3 days after that.
Call Dr. David Dillard for an appointment. 678-689-1100. That's 678-689-1100.
Breathe better, and you'll feel better.
Biz 1190, traffic and weather.
Injury crash clearing in East Cobb, Johnson Ferry at Lower Roswell, also in Northeast Cobb, Sandy Plains at East Piedmont. Two of those busy intersections impacted with accidents this part of the mid-morning. Also clearing trouble in Norcross Holcomb Bridge at Peachtree Industrial Boulevard. That's an injury crash. The expressways look okay, though. This is that mid-morning kind of lull on Fridays that we see before the big jam starts to pick up Friday after lunch hour. You know how that can go. That's the latest from the Biz 1190 Traffic Command Center. I'm Chris Monroe. It's partly sunny. It's 85 now. Meteorologist Dean DeVore is with us. He's got the full weekend forecast.
Sunshine building clouds. Could see a late-day thunderstorm in a few places this afternoon and this evening. The high getting up to 93. Partly cloudy down to 74 tonight. Sun and clouds, maybe a late-day thunderstorm up to 94 tomorrow. Lower 90s Sunday with a shower thunderstorm just about any time. I'm AccuWeather meteorologist Dean DeBoer for Biz 1190.
You know, when I said change we can believe in, I didn't say change we can believe in tomorrow.
Songs I wish we could just keep playing. Joe, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well.
Be two more weeks to go.
I've got a countdown on my cell phone for exactly that.
Yeah, well, I'm ready to. I'll be heading up there to Knoxville, Tennessee, but you know, my father-in-law, the Cornhusker, and my wife, the Cornhusker, are going to be with me. So,
well, wear red.
Well, I can't wear red in an orange stadium now.
Oh yeah, and it could be detrimental to your health.
But no, actually, you know, I thought that our two experiences with your fan base, even though your team was unmerciful to us, I thought we got along very well.
Well, they're generally pretty nice to most folks, even when they're losing, they do pretty well.
Well, I've never seen them lose in person, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, it happens. It's happened all too often, you know, in the Callahan era, but that's all over. We got Bellini now and brighter days to come.
I remember when y'all wore out Florida, what was it, 63-3 or something for the national championship in 90.
Yeah, you know, there wasn't a lot of doubt in that game, was there?
No, but I remember telling Papa, my father-in-law, that's what I call him, right before the game, I said, Papa, you know, I like the Cornhuskers and all that, but I'm an SEC guy, and I've got to go with Florida. Well, I went with Florida for about 10 seconds, and then that game was over. But, you know, the irony there, they won in 90. It took getting Florida getting beat by Nebraska for Florida to win the national championship the following year, and then we got beat by Nebraska, and then we won the national championship the following year, and then y'all wore us out another time out there at the Fiesta Bowl.
Well, maybe the success rubs off. Let's hope. We got beat enough times that maybe it'll translate well for us this year.
Well, you know, one thing that I always admired about Coach Osborne, he and Coach Fulmer, who is a dear friend of mine, became very close, and a letter that he wrote really impressed me. So I think the world of Coach Osborne.
Well, he's a stand-up guy, and if there's one thing that he's always certain to translate to his players, it's the sense of fair play and the fact that as important as it is to the fans, this is still a game, and you need to follow the rules of sportsmanship that applies to the players and coaches and fans.
Well, Philip has that letter framed in his house.
Well, good.
So, just thought I'd tell you that. All right.
Yeah.
Back to the purposeful flooding of America's heartland, part two. Tell the listeners, please. I don't think they realize our government is intentionally causing these floods.
Well, you know, we look at government in kind of a little bit of a different light here, you know, in the last 8 to 10 years. We've begun to realize that they're capable of a great deal more deception than perhaps we always hoped would be the case. Right now, the flooding that is occurring up and down the Missouri River Basin is devastating people. It is destroying farmland that won't be usable again for another 5 to as much as 10 years. You know, these are people's livelihoods, businesses, and homes destroyed. To top that off, the Corps of Engineers still refuses to tell the truth about how it happened. They're claiming that everything was fine until a series of unusually heavy spring rains occurred in May up in the upper reaches in Montana, and that's what created the tipping point. Well, their numbers don't add up. It doesn't pass the smell test. You know, those rains amounted to 4 to 5 million acre feet of additional runoff. Well, at the rate that they're releasing water from the dams, you can get rid of 1 million acre feet in about 3 days. So that means all of those rains that were supposedly responsible were gone in about 2 weeks. Well, we've been releasing at these rates now. By the time it's over, it'll be more than 3 months that we've been doing that. So where did all the other water come from? You know, are we recycling it? Yeah, I don't think so. What it's coming from is the extraordinarily high mountain snowpack about which the Corps was warned. They knew it was there. They were told as early as January by hydrologists, engineers, the National Weather Service, even the Corps in Washington warned them that this was there. This is a problem. The National Weather Service told them that, you know, this extraordinarily high snowpack with an extraordinarily high water content, meaning it was a wet snow, is looming above you. Below there is soil that is saturated to the 99th percentile. So it's not going to absorb anything when this starts to melt. It's all coming as runoff. And yet the Corps did nothing.
Joe,
nothing at all.
Joe, in this article you suggested this evidence is mounting up to point to perhaps that the Corps is being distracted from its essential mission of flood control and actually pushing flood control way down on the priority list to make room for ecosystem restoration. Can you talk to that?
Ecosystem restoration is a kind of a green trendy concept of tr- trying to use the dam system, which was designed for flood control, as a means of mimicking the natural cycle of the pre-dam river. You know, there's several environmentalist groups, but the foremost among them is AmericanRivers.org, who believes that we need to return all these rivers to pre-dam states all across the country, and they are working to that effect through the Corps of Engineers and through willing politicians to accomplish this fact. They want to remove human activity from anywhere where water has ever been. According to them, you know, and this stuff borders on animism, where you start assigning human qualities to inanimate or natural products or processes. You know, they liken keeping a river from its floodplain as being the same as keeping a mother from her child. You know, to them, flooding is the way the river feeds. Well, you know, that's all well and good if you're playing Magic the Gathering, okay? But this is reality here. And the reality is they have so gained sway amongst the policymakers in Washington and amongst these agencies that they actually now have become, as I say in my article, less a flood control Corps of Engineers as more of a Fish and Wildlife Service that dabbles occasionally in flood control. They're spending $73 million a year just on the Missouri River alone to play with their fish and wildlife, to build emergent sandbar habitat for these endangered species. They're spending $6 million a year on flood control. Priorities are way out of whack. Their eye is off the ball, and we're paying the price for it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this game has real human lives at stake, real human property at stake. This isn't just, you know, playing with the environment. These are real people that live along these plains.
Well, as I've said before, the amount of power that is contained behind these dams is incredible. You know, you could fit Lake of the Ozarks is a very large lake. You know, many people are familiar with it. You could fit 10 of those in just one of those reservoirs up there, and there's 6 of them. And there's certain things in life you don't play with. A nuclear weapon's one, and a dam system is another. They have equal power. The only thing is that the dam system releases it a little more slowly. And, well, but we're seeing the devastation now.
Well, Joe, we got to hop out. We're unfortunately out of time. We've been speaking with Joe Herring. You can find more of Joe's writings at his website, readmorejoe.com. Joe, we certainly appreciate your time.
Joe?
I appreciate it. Good to talk to you.
Go Big Red, buddy.
You got it.
All right. This is Alan Butler, Butler on Business. When we come back, we're going to discuss the worst hotel fire in American history happened right here in Atlanta.
Keep it tuned to Biz 1190 for the latest from Hartsfield-Jackson as Joy Presley and the travel team help you fly out in time.
Your security wait times at all your checkpoints are less than 10 minutes.
Biz 1190, travel and transit.
I'm Joy Presley.
Always right on the money.
Hi, Atlanta. Listen to the Scott Luther Gold and Silver Express Hour turning 50K into a quarter of a million Monday through Saturday, 4 to 5, right here on Biz 1190, the Wall Street Business Network, WAFS. Greg McCoach, president of Amerigold.
I think silver is going to outperform gold from here on out. China is actually teaching their citizens to own silver.
Hi, I'm Scott Luther at LRCcoins.com. I'll teach you how to buy gold and silver at only 1% over dealer's cost. God created gold and silver, man made paper money. Which is worth more?
This tree was never chopped down because this crutch never needed to be carved. Because these legs never grew weak. Because this child never got polio. Over the past 20 years, Rotary Club members have helped immunize over 2 billion children against polio. Now we're on the brink of eradicating this crippling disease once and for all. But we need your help. Thanks to an historic matching grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, every dollar Rotary raises will work twice as hard to make sure vaccines reach the people who need it, to protect the children of the world against polio forever. This is an opportunity to end polio now. Visit rotary.org/endpolio. Rotary, humanity in motion.
Let me try.
Okay, just remember what I showed you.
Yep, there was a bunny who had one big ear and another big ear. They looped-a-looped, made a bow, and the bunny hopped away. I did it!
Oh, good job, kiddo. Now let's tie your other shoe.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I got smart about mortgages. Now, it's my house I go home to.
I got smart about college. Now my kid's off to a great start.
When it comes to your money, whatever you want to get smart about, you can find it at smartaboutmoney.org.
I got smart about health insurance. Now both my finances and I are healthy.
Smartaboutmoney.org is a free online resource from the National Endowment for Financial Education. We're an independent nonprofit foundation dedicated to helping people just like you get sound information about money.
I got smart about protecting my job. Now, I'm doing better than ever.
For everything from how to build an emergency fund to how to deal with job uncertainty, smartaboutmoney.org has the answers you're looking for.
I got smart about credit cards. Now paper or plastic has a whole new meaning.
Smartaboutmoney.org, the easy place to start when you want to get smart.
Are you ready to learn and be entertained at the same time? Want to get a financial sense of direction in this crazy economic and political time period? Then tune in to It's All About Money with me, Bill Tatro, weekdays at 5, right here on Biz 1190. Always right on the money.
Social Security is a program that works. It's fully funded for the next 40 years. Stop picking on Social Security. There are a lot of places...
Senator, are you really saying the arithmetic on Social Security works?
I'm saying the arithmetic and Social Security works. I have no doubt it does.
It's not a crisis.
No, it's not in crisis.
If I listen long enough to you,
did you hear the
I'd find a way to believe that it's all true. Knowing that you lied straight-faced while I cried. Till I look to find a reason to believe someone like you makes it hard to live without.
That was U.S. Senator Harry Reid saying that Social Security was in such good shape. Okay, now let's talk about the Winecoff fire. It happened here in Atlanta. It's still to this day the worst hotel fire in U.S. history. The Winecoff Hotel was built in 1913 by renowned architect William Lee Stoddard. The Winecoff Hotel was Atlanta's tallest and most luxurious hotel. It stood 15 stories tall with an open-air terrace, dining room, coffee shop, and lounge. The hotel was strategically located in the heart of Atlanta's retail district. According to their stationery, the hotel was advertised as being absolutely fireproof, even though it was designed without fire alarms, fire escapes, or a sprinkler system.
Well, unfortunately, Alan, on the night of December 7th, 1946, the hotel was filled to capacity with over 280 guests, including shoppers, travelers, World War II soldiers. They were all there coming together in Georgia, and it was, unfortunately, the five-year anniversary of Pearl Harbor Day. That was approaching, and Christmas was just around the corner. There was, I think, a sense of hope and excitement in the air.
Yeah, well, around 3 o'clock in the morning, the elevator operator descending from the top floor noticed the smell of smoke around the fifth floor. Now, panicked, she stumbled out of the elevator upon reaching the lobby, and she began screaming, "Fire, fire." Now, unbeknownst to her, the fire had already completely engulfed floors 3, 4, and 5. For employees of the hotel and guests who were awake, realization and reaction would come quickly. I mean, they realized there was a fire and they got out. But for the guests who were asleep, survival would come at a much higher price. Now, before dawn, a total of 119 lives would be lost.
Well, they've since attributed to the tragedy largely to the hotel's design itself. One of the most critical factors, in fact, was the fact that the hotel was based on this European design where the hotel was a perfect square and the stairwell and the elevator shafts were running straight through the center, so straight through the middle, with thin wooden doors leading to the stairwells. Those had been left open on several of the floors. So what we saw here was, the guests...
It was like a giant chimney.
It was literally, that's a great analogy. It was like a chimney. It all rushed up the middle, and we saw a lot of the guests were forced out of the windows of the room because they weren't able to come down the center because of the way the fire and smoke were coming right up the middle.
Yeah, so the only egress out of the building were in this impassable column where they had a bunch of fire going on. So, you know, they were in a pickle, the ones that were asleep, to wake up. Now, many fashioned ropes made out of sheet. Others, you know, doused their rooms and with water and hung in there as best they could. Now, by the time the fire trucks arrived, many guests were already on the verge of jumping out of hotel windows, and there were many people that leapt to their death moments before ladders actually reached their window. Now, fear had reached such a fevered pitch that panic-stricken guests became desperate, and nothing short of a human rain shower of people jumping out of those hotel windows ensued. Several firefighters fell to their deaths or were injured by being knocked off their ladders from people that were jumping out of the windows. Mothers actually hurled their babies from windows below only to have them fall to their death.
Well, unfortunately, the rescue efforts were further hindered by the location of the building. The mortgage guarantee building was opposite to the hotel, which only allowed for about 6 feet in the alley between them. So this really prevented any kind of rescue from the fire trucks. And in addition to that, maybe one of the other most unfortunate limitations came from the fact of the trucks themselves. Back then, fire trucks, they were outfitted with these ladders that could only reach as high as the seventh floor, and this hotel was much taller.
Yeah, so 80% of the fatalities were guests who were staying above the eighth floor and on the backside of the building. Now, it was reported that 36 people died from falling or jumping, 32 burned, and 41 suffocated from smoke and breathing in all those fumes. Now, perhaps the most tragic of these victims were 30 teenage children who lost their lives and the elderly Winekoffs who had actually resided at the hotel since its inception. Now, by the time Mayor Hartsfield, that's where the name the Hartsfield Airport arrived from, Mayor Hartsfield, by the time he got to the location, nothing remained but smoldering embers and the smell of burnt flesh. The brick exterior was still intact, but the hollow shell of its inside told a different and tragic story. Now, according to a report filed by the National Board of Underwriters, a partially burned mattress found in a hallway on the third floor gave rise to the conclusion that a careless and possibly intoxicated guest had dropped a cigarette onto it, thus starting the fire.
Well, there was obviously a lot of public outcry at this incident. Somebody wanted to... You know, everybody wanted somebody to be held accountable for it. So Mayor Hartsfield, he invited these fire experts from across the country to come in and conduct their investigations. And many of the experts were convinced that because of the massive devastation, the intensity of the fire, the intensity of the heat and the rapidness at which the fire spread, they didn't think that a smoldering mattress really could be responsible for the cause of the fire. And there were starting to emerge several theories of that this could possibly be arson. Some of those included an illegal poker game on the third floor that spun out of control. But in general, the press and the public were more concerned about why an absolutely fireproof hotel lacked any fire escapes, lacked any sprinkler systems, fire alarms, things like that. Then they weren't really as worried about these theories about how the fire got started.
Now, there was some beneficial effects to the fire, if you can call it that. Because the building had a brick exterior, the owners were able, under certain insurance provisions, to classify the hotel as fireproof, even though it was not fitted with the fire escapes, fire sprinklers, or an alarm system. Now, the exterior didn't burn, but everything else inside did. So as a result of the Winekoff fire, which, by the way, up until this fire, there were no national codes. So there was no code on how to build a hotel and what had to be equipped in a hotel. But as a result of the Winekoff fire, a lot of the fire codes we have today were put into place to prevent another such disaster. Now, the Wyckoff after the hotel, in April of 1951, the hotel reopened as the Peachtree on Peachtree Hotel. Now, this time around, it had fire alarms, fire escapes, but competing hotels were cropping up all around Atlanta's retail district, and by 1967, with no buyers in sight, the hotel was donated to the Georgia Baptist Convention, who eventually turned it into housing for the elderly. There is an excellent book on the Wyckoff fire. It is one of those moments in Atlanta history that for a lot of people who are new to the city or young like Jason may not have known about the Wyckoff fire. The building actually sits there today, so you can run by and see it. You can Google it. You can learn a lot about the Wyckoff fire. I actually read the book on it several years ago, and it's tough to do a book report in the span of about 10 minutes, but such is life on radio. Jason, I've enjoyed it today. I've enjoyed the week. Taylor, thank you very much. My name is Alan Butler, Jason Riddle, Taylor Austin, and we will be back on Monday at 10 a.m.
Quitting time! Quitting time!
That's all, folks!
This has been a Filmwise presentation.